7:05, The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. Hey, Maddie Barrows is going to join us from the B at 7:35. Hey. We'll talk a little Niner.
Matthew.
And Gene Apes, Grant Apes, is going to join us at 8 o'clock.
What?
He's going to come in. We'll talk, God knows, all kinds of stuff with Grants. Tons of stuff to come, including four down territory in about 8 minutes from now. I'm giving the exact times. If you missed the first hour of the show, hey, shame on you, but congratulations for getting that extra hour of sleep. Here's what you missed. That's all available at KHK.com for some reason, so you can check that out later if you missed that on the podcast.
Yeah, when I listen to it back, I'm like,
Football thing, Katie. You wouldn't understand.
Yeah, well,
we'll get into
exactly.
Some Kings notes here, but I was just thinking when you did your update, Nate, and fine job on that, too.
fine job, Nate.
You know, sometimes during the show, there's a light bulb that tends to go off in our heads. Last year, she
is
petting
you.
I'm kind of uncomfortable. Last year, this calendar year, whatever you want to call it, is this a really good sports year for the Bay Area or a historically horrible year for the Bay Area? And let me present why. So you have the Golden State Warriors blowing a 3-1 lead in the finals. You have the San Jose Sharks losing in the Stanley Cup Finals. You have the San Francisco Giants on the verge of one of the all-time hugest collapses in baseball history. And baseball, by the way, been around a while. And on top of that, I mean, I don't know, football, it's good for the Raiders, but we still let's just assume for a second that the Raiders go through the year, make the playoffs, get out in the second or third round, and then promptly move to Las Vegas. This has the opportunity of being the best worst year any city in sports history.
What can you do to possibly falsify that opinion?
I don't know, make stuff up.
Okay. You might be right. Like, there's certainly a lot of compelling arguments there to be made. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago that the Warriors won the title, like, just a couple of months after the Giants won it.
But I'm talking about this year.
Yeah.
The fact is, the Warriors were in the NBA Finals. The Sharks were in the NHL Finals. The Raiders are, let's say, going to be perhaps a playoff team. The Giants.
The Raiders season will end in disappointment.
Of course it will.
Because they're not going to win the Super Bowl.
Of course. And then you have the Giants, who are...
That's ending in disappointment for them?
Well, yeah, you want me to walk it back? Because basically what it is like, expectations are going to be so high for that team, right? They're either going to bomb out and not make the playoffs, and fans will be rabid, or they'll make the playoffs and they'll lose a playoff game, which is like the absolute worst way to end your season.
Okay, so I'm curious for Raiders fans, and I'm sure they'll start chiming in on the old texty line.
339-1140 is the phone line.
I think that they have had such a drought and disappointment for the last decade that if they make the playoffs, whether they win or lose in the first round, that Raiders fans are going to be extremely happy.
That's not how football fans work.
I mean,
there's shades of disappointment. You're right. I'm making it very binary when it doesn't need to be. But if you make the playoffs and you don't win the Super Bowl, it's crushing.
Your last game was a loss.
It doesn't matter what your expectations
are.
I
think afterwards, though, to Katie's point, Raider fans will say, nah, man, that's a great
year.
But I think to your point, Nate, if the Raiders make the playoffs, regardless of what their record is, there's going to be more than a few Raider fans that are talking Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like championship or bust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not unique to Raider fan either.
No,
as a football fan.
Yeah.
If you make the playoffs, it's on. You're hot, man. You're the hottest team. You're the next New York Giants that are going to storm through from a wild card and make it all the way up and beat the undefeated Patriots. You're that team.
We got to get our crack research team on this because I really am curious if there's ever been a better word.
Crack?
As in crackheads. Yeah,
okay,
I smoke a lot of crack. Because you could make a huge argument that the Bay Area has had an insanely good season, that they have so many teams in contention and two that were in the finals coming up, and then the Giants, who have won three championships in the last 20 minutes, that's all great.
I was thinking during the update that you guys are probably the worst type of sports fans.
Well, sure.
Because you guys have been bitching and moaning for weeks now about the Giants after I was checking in with Nate very early on about, oh my gosh, are you worried yet? Are you worried yet? No, not worried at all.
No,
and
no.
Now he's gone completely off the edge.
I would counter that that's the best type of sports fan.
They're still in it, though.
Well, sure. Sure they are.
I mean, granted, they're playing like complete dog crap right now.
Yes.
But how many teams can do that? They had the best record in baseball before the break. They've played like crap since then.
They had the worst record since.
But they're still in it.
Yeah.
So are you guys going to, you know, if they definitely make the playoffs and they're in it, are you going to be all back and, oh,
yes.
Giants! Immediately,
absolutely.
With the first loss, just go right back over the edge.
Yes, but as of right now, it's football season because the Niners are going to the Super Bowl.
If we were married, if we were undefeated. If we were married, Katie, God forbid, the first five years.
Even just hearing that makes me a little sick to my stomach.
And the first 5 years of our marriage was bliss and awesome, and then the last 6 months of our marriage, you woke up every morning and I took a dump on your pillow. I don't know if that marriage is salvageable. You still want to prop up the first 5 years and live in the past, but look, you wake up every morning and you open your eyes and there's a steamy turd in your face.
Oh my God.
Metaphorically speaking,
that's kind of like what it's like with the Giants.
Your analogies, man.
But that's where it is. It's a by the way, from the 209, Dave's a moron. Hey.
Hey.
We know.
How is this Giants drop a big collapse? They've sucked all year. Well, they had the best record in baseball before the All-Star break. And now they have the worst record in baseball, literally the definition of a collapse. Like, you could not have more of a collapse than that. So maybe, I don't know, figure your life out and get back on the meds. We'll take a break when we get back. Four down territory on the drive. Sports 1140 KHDK.
I'm going to do my best Peyton Manning impression here as we're doing an audible. Omaha!
Omaha! Omaha! Omaha!
Flip the play. Dave, take it.
What is this? Is this breaking news? I think it is. Oh, we'll go ahead and do this on the fly and switch around the first question in our four-down territory. We'll push everything forward because we have breaking news.
Huh?
Jeff Fisher has just gotten a 3-year contract extension from the St. Louis Rams.
Nate has to become
a
fan now.
Or the L.A.
Whatever. Who cares? Whoever they are.
I think he got the contract with the St. Louis Rams, actually, which means he's unemployed right now.
How is that? Here's my question. How is that possible? How is that possible, Katie?
Gosh.
How is that possible, Nate?
I saw this first come through last night, and I mean, like late last night.
What does he have? He has some kind form of blackmail, right?
I don't know. John Clayton said
Aunt Susan said in Seattle that
Fisher's extension will be finalized soon, will be announced, along with a new deal for defensive tackle Michael Brockers. Yeah, who cares? Jeff Fisher.
I'd love to see the details on that because as stupid as that is, I feel like this is a great opportunity to point out that when the team first moved to California, Stan Kroenke is such a tight ass that he tried to make sure that the players under contract, because they signed them in Missouri, were subject to Missouri labor laws because California, not quite as friendly towards guys like Stan Kroenke.
I love it.
Got in a little bit of trouble for that.
God bless you, Jeff Fisher.
Classic Rams.
Ugh.
We now return you to your regular scheduled program. Jets versus Bills tonight. Who you got?
Ugh.
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 I'm going to go ahead and take the Jets here. I'm going to go ahead and take the Jets because I think that by just playing the straight numbers game, this is the same as like picking the color of the uniform, and they've won the last four matchups, six of the last seven. This is it. This is it. The Bills are going to finally break that and lose, and the Jets are going to win and break that whole thing for them.
No
way. They're finally
going
to get a win.
You're wrong, Katie. The Bills are inspired by the things that Rex said about his lap band and nepotism and things like that. I'm sticking with this Bills team. They're only 1-point dogs on the road. I'm taking it, and the over-under is 40.5. Take the under. Bills defense smothering Ryan Fitzpatrick tonight.
I don't know
tonight.
If there's a game that I could care less about than this one tonight, but okay.
Detroit and Tennessee.
It's not just Rex Ryan. We're also forgetting the motivational words of his brother Rob Ryan. That's right. Rob Ryan eating cookies as vegetables because they are vegetarian. You said, I don't know if you meant to do this or not, you said the Bills were 1-point dogs on the road. I believe they're at home.
Yeah, right.
Okay, there you go. Mm-hmm. Buffalo hosting. And that's the only reason, even though it's a New York versus New York, that's the only reason why I'm going to give the Bills the edge here. Their home opener, tough loss last week. And Rex Ryan is always good for a couple of Gatorade throws and chalkboard flips before it gets old. Just because of that, I'll say Bills barely.
Guys, what's more fragile, Rob Ryan's belt bucker or Cam Newton's head? Let's see.
What's a belt bucker?
What did I say, bucker? Well, there goes my bit. Back to you, boys.
Off script.
A girl.
I'll go back to script. Cam Newton said, it's not my job to lobby for my health. Is that a scary thought?
Well, from a very literal sense, no, because it's not his job to lobby for his health. That's why he has a players' union. But it is maybe, he should be concerned for his health, and I don't think it's out of line for him to lobby for the game to be officiated by the rules that are in the rule book.
Well, I don't think Cam Newton needs to lobby for anything because Roger Goodell's on it. So there you go. Roger Goodell says safety's number one. So why does Cam Newton need to worry about it? You could literally take metal baseball bats and fire them right at Cam Newton's dome. He could be bleeding from the nose, but Roger Goodell's on it.
He says it's not his job to do it, and it shouldn't be his job. But this is the NFL we're talking about. Someone has to do it because it sure as hell isn't Roger Goodell, no matter what garbage he's spewing from that gap of his.
He just put $100
million. Just $100
million
for a play smart, play safe, or whatever it is, except for there's no explanation of where that money is going and what it's doing.
Too cool. And to color rush uniforms.
Let's all live in the past, shall we? Hey, the 49ers won last week, and then other than, you know, winning this week, what would a victory be for the Niners?
Well, they actually are on the road. I'm going to get this one right. And they're 13.5-point underdogs. A victory for me would be beating the spread. I would take that against Carolina on the road at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Well, damn it, Nate. You stole my thunder. I agree with you 1,000,000,000%. That's exactly what I was going to say. Cover the spread. Keep it within two touchdowns. And that's a huge deal. I think we're all hoping that the defense can work a little bit of the magic they showed against the Rams. That would be more impressive against the Panthers. I think the real question for the Niners, even more than that, is can they score against Carolina? How are they going to get in the end zone against Carolina? Keep it under two touchdowns, and that's a moral victory.
To me, a win for them is to actually see some improvement from week one to week two with Blaine Gabbert's decision-making. I mean, he did an okay job in week one. Of course, it is against the Rams. We saw him get out and run a little bit. I would also like for when he runs and he makes that decision, because he's a little leery of it sometimes, and then he makes it, and then he just does it all wrong. Slide, please. Just better decision making. Good Lord.
By the way, going back one question before we go to break, when we talk about Cam Newton and protecting himself and all that, according to Dean Blandino, it was kind of his fault.
Dean, that doesn't apply to any of the things that happened against the Broncos. No. None of them. Not one of those hits does that apply.
It's true what he's saying, but you're right, Nate. Exactly that. It does not matter. Helmet to helmet is helmet to helmet. Good Lord, these people are just really working me today.
Also, you can't hit a runner helmet to helmet anymore either.
Exactly.
Dean.
Yeah, you can.
Apparently.
Yeah, you can. I saw it last weekend.
Isn't it funny that Dean was never an official, but he's the head?
Yeah, he is.
Did you read the excerpt from Mike Pereira's book when he talks about that, when he was the head of officiating?
No.
And the time he got shoved by Roger Goodell because he was standing up for a player?
That's neat.
Oh, man. Yeah.
We got to have Pereira on soon, though, by the way. Mike Pereira, friend of the show, friend of the station.
Friend of everybody, yeah, I'd
really
say.
He's
and
good.
Tito, especially.
Absolutely, Tito. And a fine golfer, indeed. We'll take a break, come back. We'll expand on the 49ers in Carolina this weekend. Matt Barrows of the Bee joins us on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK. So according to Chip Kelly, basically he can run on you, he can throw on you, and you just kind of have to hope for rain and something in the turf to be able to stop him. As Sac Bee's Matt Barrows joins us right now, our 49er insider. Matt, how the heck do they stop Cam Newton?
Well, I don't know. In addition to all those superlatives that Chip Kelly was saying, you know, a big difference between Cam Newton now and in the Super Bowl is that he's got his favorite receiver, Kelvin Benjamin, is back. He wasn't around for Super Bowl 50, and he had a big game in Week 1 against the Broncos, and that's just another thing that the 49ers have to deal with. Sort of a night and day difference between the quarterback they're facing Week 2 versus the one that they had in Week 1.
And the Broncos, and I'm just going to go out on a limb and say this, probably a better defense than the Niners.
Yeah, maybe just a teens.
Maybe just a teens better. So you have Kelvin Benjamin back, who off the knee injury, had a phenomenal rookie year and looks like he hasn't lost a step. But then on top of that, you got a speedster like the former Niner, Teddy Ginn, and then Greg Olsen, who may be the best tight end in the league, not named Rob Gronkowski. So that secondary is going to be massively tested.
Yeah, and you've got a Panthers team that is coming off a loss. I feel like that's always more difficult when a team wants to avenge a week earlier. And obviously had played on Thursday night, so they've got 9 days of rest. So all the cards are stacked against the 49ers. This will be a really interesting test. I mean, Jim Tomsula's team went through the same thing last year, and they failed miserably. It was a real flop, and it set the tone for the next, what, you know, 8-9 games or so. This will be a test of Chip Kelly, and to see whether he can get his team more ready. There's no other way to put it. I mean, that was one of, to me, Jim Harbaugh's strengths. Harbaugh's teams would go on the road, and they would usually win, and they certainly wouldn't get blown out. You know, they almost went undefeated that first year. I think it was just a game at Baltimore on a short week on Thanksgiving that he lost that year. So that'll be the early test, the early litmus test for Chip Kelly and the new 49ers.
Matt, I don't know that there is a single person, fan, or quote-unquote expert that expects the 49ers to be able to get this win. However, having said that, is there something that they can do that this would be considered a win for them other than the actual W?
Well, like I said, I mean, keeping it close against the team that won the NFC last year, I think would be, you know, obviously not a W, but a moral victory and a confidence boost for this team. Like I said, you know, the 49ers went on the road last year and they just got trounced. And it wasn't just the Steelers game. They got bounced the next week in Arizona. And so they got a very similar scenario coming up with the Seahawks coming right after, right on the heels of this Carolina game. So if they come out and play well and keep the game close, and if that defense plays as well on the road as it did at home the other night, yeah, to me that's a nice confidence boost to say that, you know what, you know, we're gonna compete this year and we've got a shot at this NFC West. Like I said, there's a lot of things going against this team going on the road on Sunday.
From an offensive perspective, other than just keeping the game close, What change do you need to see in terms of what they do execution-wise against a very good Panthers team for it to be considered your moral victory?
Well, you know, one of the things that was absent, I thought, in the Rams game, as well as the 49ers played, I figured that when Chip Kelly's offense got going, it would have a snowball effect that, you know, once it got going, it would really start to weigh down on the Rams' defense. There would be a rhythm established, that the offense would be better at the end of the game than it was at the beginning of the game, and it wasn't. It was disjointed. It was halting. Once they got a lead, they seemed to give the ball back very quickly. The two teams combined for 7 punts in the third quarter, 4 of them by the 49ers. So, you know, in terms of rhythm and pace, I think that there's still a lot that this offense can do. And I think that's partially because, you know, Jeremy Curley was brand new. It seemed like some of Blaine Gabbert's bad throws, and there were several. I mean, that game could have swung on a pick six. The Rams had a couple of opportunities for that. I thought that usually in those scenarios, Gabbert was shooting for Jeremy Curley, his new slot receiver, who just arrived 2.5 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So they're not quite on the same page yet. My point being that there is room for improvement. So sort of the silver lining of all of that is that Gabbert and that offense can get better. There's room to get better, and they need to do that, obviously, Sunday in Carolina.
Matt Barrow's with us on KHDK. Matt, Greg Olsen always creates a tough matchup, obviously. I want to talk about how that relates to Navarro Bowman. He was obviously recognized last year for having a great comeback season, but there were a lot of questions as to whether his coverage skills had returned to where they were pre-injury. Now, we've just seen one game, but do you think he's back at a point where he can, I don't know, at least compete with Greg Olsen come Sunday?
Yeah, at least compete. You know, Patrick Willis in his prime would cover the team's best tight end. And, you know, as fast and as good as Patrick Willis was, he still sometimes got beat in the end zone and for big plays like that. To me, what's intriguing is the way that the 49ers use that three safety look. Remember, they picked Jaquaski Tartt last year in the second round, and they felt like he was one of their better defenders, and they figured out ways to get him on the field. And one of the ways they do that is to put him at safety and to put Eric Reed up at the line of scrimmage. And I'm just wondering whether against a team like the Panthers that has a very good tight end like Greg Olsen, whether that's the answer to put a big safety like Reed down there in the box and to let him cover him. I think that'll be interesting to see how the 49ers handle that. And it could be, if it's successful, a template that they use for the rest of the season. Jimmy Graham coming up against the Seahawks and so on and so forth. So I'd be looking for that Sunday in Charlotte.
Matt Barrow's with us. Matt, more likely to happen this Sunday, the Niners get close to the offensive success they had against the Rams or the defensive success they had against the Rams?
Yeah, I'd say it's the latter, just because the Panthers have such a good defense themselves. And, to their credit, the 49ers really had the Rams confused, I thought, on offense. All those packages, one of the ones I just mentioned, coming in, and apparently they've got a few more tricks up their sleeves. So I thought that was that was a good sign that the 49ers could use so many different packages, and they didn't end up confusing themselves. So that it's being done in a cohesive manner, which I don't think was always the case last year. So everybody obviously understands what they're doing. And, more to the point, the defensive coordinator has put the right guys in the right situation, the right guys in the right spot. So I think that's a good sign of things to come.
Matt Barrows of the Sack Bee joining us this morning. With all the news coming out of week one, and specifically the helmet-to-helmet hits with Cam Newton, there's been so much discussion over that over the last week plus. Do you think that the 49ers defense needs to be careful going up against Cam Newton because of all of that?
Yeah, you're asking if the 49ers could suffer from
yes.
what the Broncos did a week earlier. Yeah, that's always the case, especially when it comes to quarterbacks. I do believe that the officiating crew will have a sharper eye out for those things. And
you mean
hopefully
an eye
the 49ers
open?
Know that as well.
Matt, the Niners secondary, especially Tremaine Brock, they drew a lot of praise for their performance Monday night, and there are a lot of variables there. Case Keenum stinks, the Rams stink, their wide receivers stink, and they don't have a very aggressive scheme in the passing game. But my question is, how much praise do those guys deserve, and how much of it was just the Rams being really, really bad?
Yeah, I think it's a case of, 6-1, half a dozen of the other. The Rams are indeed very bad. And, like the 49ers, they've really kind of struck out at wide receiver a lot of times, Tavon Austin being the exception. But, the 49ers played well. And Tremaine Brock is a guy who, for years and years, we'd watch him in practice in the off-season and the preseason, and he would just shine. He would make a lot of interceptions, and you would think, okay, this is the year this guy really breaks out and has a great season. And he inevitably would get hurt, and you would never see that potential. And you started to see it with a couple of batted balls and pass breakups Monday against the Rams. And you just wonder if he could stay healthy for a while. I mean, he's just at the right point in his career. I think he's something like 27 years old. I mean, in the meaty part of the curve as far as a cornerback is concerned, and this really could be his year. And an aggressive cornerback like him, you would think, would excel in a defense that Jim O'Neill has drawn up. I mean, has the chance to make a lot of plays, a lot of interceptions. Things are stacking up for this to be Tremaine Brock's year.
So what did you see about the way that that they're drawing up that defense? Remember under Vic Fangio, they were very conservative, rarely sent more than four guys after the quarterback.
Right.
And you could see they were not afraid to bring pressure at Case Keenum. How aggressive is this scheme going to be?
Well, it was interesting because they were bringing pressure, but they weren't always blitzing. They were bringing pass rushers from different spots. The cornerback, I saw the slot Nickelback rushed the passer a couple times. That was Jimmy Ward. Eric Reed, I mentioned, was playing along the line of scrimmage. He rushed a couple of times. Tart even rushed from the deep safety spot. So it wasn't so much that they were bringing, you know, five, six guys. It was that they were bringing players from different angles. And I think that's going to be an interesting thing on Sunday. I mean, the Panthers saw that. The Rams never saw that because the 49ers didn't do it in the preseason. The Panthers have the benefit of watching that game, and they're not going to be as surprised when the nickel cornerback comes off and starts running to Cam Newton. He's going to have an answer for that. So the question is, you know, what's the next chess move by Jim O'Neill and the defense? Can they keep offenses on their toes? Can they keep things fresh enough that they can do things that are not expected?
Matt Barrow is joining us, and the analysis of the Niners is predicated on the Ram asterisk and not really knowing, you know, because of how crappy the Rams appear, what the Niners are. But Carlos Hyde specifically, he looked as good as he's looked to you since he's come in the league. You worry about the injuries. I thought he looked phenomenal against the Rams.
Yeah, he did. He looked fresh and, you know, looked hungry. And that opening touchdown run was, a great run just because of what he didn't do. I mean, he was patient and he waited for those guys to cut across his nose and make key blocks. And he, you know, as he said after the game, the Red Sea parted and he just sort of waltzed into the end zone. You know, the concern is that he's still taking a lot of big hits. I thought there were a couple of times that he could have gotten out of bounds and sort of avoided a gang tackle. And that was where he got in trouble, I thought, last year. You know, he gets caught, and he's still fighting for extra yards, and he takes on the first tackler, and, you know, they're sort of at a standstill. And then two other guys come in and, you know, take him to the ground. And that's where these ankle, knee injuries tend to happen. You know, it's just something that he's just got to get a better feel for it, know when to pick his battles. You know, I hate to say this, but I watched him in that game and I said to myself, gee, that's a running back that is not going to make it through 16 games. He just took too many sort of twisting, body contorted type of hits there, by the Rams defense. And you just worry about whether that can withstand a 16-game schedule.
Matt, are there any injury updates for either team that you have on your radar going into Sunday?
No, that was one of the benefits of the Rams game. There weren't any major injuries. You saw Andrew Tiller, the right guard, leave for about seven plays or so. But he came back and seemed to be fine by the end. And he was the really only significant injury coming out of that game. So the things to watch for are, Eric Armstead is still limited, but, you know, for the life of me, seemed to be playing pretty well with that shoulder against the Rams. Mm-hmm. And then Glenn Dorsey is coming back from that ACL, and he's going to get, worked into the mix at some point and should be a significant contributor by, you know, mid-season, by the end of the season. So he's another defensive lineman that they can rotate in and keep that line fresh so that, unlike the Eagles of past years, they can be, you know, firing on all cylinders by the end of the season.
Matt, a guy that got a lot of kind words in the preseason was Trent Brown. How did he fare in his first major action of the year?
I thought that he was excellent. I mean, I thought he was really good. That last touchdown by Carlos Hyde, it was just a one-yard carry, but I was watching Trent Brown on that play, and he just basically walked his guy into the end zone, and Carlos Hyde got behind Trent Brown and followed him in for an easy score. Trent Brown, it's all about motivation, and he seems to be, he's got Anthony Davis playing behind him, which I think is probably a good thing for this scenario. He knows that he can't afford to slip up because there's somebody a quality player behind him who is very eager to come in and take on a starting role. So, as long as Trent Brown is focused, as long as he's motivated, he's just got uncanny size. Nobody else has that size in this league. And, even guys like Von Miller say that he's a hard guy to get around. So that's a real difference, I think, between the 2015 49ers and this year's version.
when you mentioned that motivation, I didn't watch him specifically the whole game, but on the occasions that I did, it appeared that he's kind of got that motor that you talk about sometimes with defensive guys, where he would get off the ball and he would run through one guy and get to that next level and maul two or three different guys on the same play.
Yeah, and I think by the end of the game, when you couple that with an offense that can run at the pace that Chip Kelly's can, that starts to wear down a team, and that's exactly what Kelly and the 49ers are looking for this season.
Last thing for you, Matt. It lost in all the hullabaloo over this big victory and the shutout was Torrey Smith. 2 catches, 13 yards. And you wonder, the way Blaine Gabbert is this just a matter of they took what the defense got them? Or are you worried that Torrey's going to kind of be lost being a deep threat and Gabbert maybe not being able to fire the ball in there?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. I wrote a story today about how well the 49ers have done with sacks in the preseason and in week one. And there's a quote at the end from Gabbert where he says, you know, I think a lot of quarterbacks get into trouble on third down where they stand there and they're waiting for that deeper throw that gets them to the first down, when really they should just kind of take what the defense gives them and let the receiver take it on a shallow pass and then run for the first down. That's obviously telling you that Blaine Gabbert is settling for those checkdowns, which he's criticized for. And Torrey Smith does not run a lot of checkdown routes. So, yeah, if I was Torrey Smith and I read that quote, I'd be worried about getting the ball. Obviously Blaine Gabbert hit Torrey Smith on some big passes last year, but it wasn't a regular thing. They were sort of picking and choosing when to take chances on that deep ball. It was not a routine throw for Blaine Gabbert. If you've got Torrey Smith on your fantasy team, you may want to trade him in for somebody else, maybe Jeremy Curley.
An alumnus of both Virginia and Northwestern. He's been covering the 49ers for 13 years now. His favorite player is Darryl Green. These are all things you can find out at sackb.com with the lovely and talented Matt Barrows. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Matt.
Anytime, guys. Talk to you soon.
All right, have a good one.
Take care. That is Matt Barrows with a lot of info on those 49ers. It'll be interesting. It's an interesting perspective from Niner fans, which I can relate to. You're not even looking for a win this weekend.
I am, damn it. Super Bowl bound.
Looking for a non-embarrassment.
Yeah.
That'd be fine. We'll take a break. We'll come back.
I'm way too excited.
Are you?
Yeah.
Are you really?
I know they're not going to win.
I just
How
thought about this.
How are you going to watch it, though? I asked them before. I'm like,
you can't,
you're probably
right?
not going to see any football this weekend.
I mean, things on Saturday, so Sunday morning I'll wake up. I'm going to be in Chico, dude. There's no shortage of places to have 7 or 8 Bloody Marys and watch the Niners
that
get their
That is not
crap
happening.
The first morning of your honeymoon marital bliss.
Yeah.
And you're going to be...
That'll be a fail.
No, I don't think so.
No, that's true. I mean, she kind of knows what she's walking
she
into.
She does.
Let's see.
That is why she is an angel.
First day of them being married, she's going to have to drag him naked and drunk back into their room. It's like, well, that's a sign of things to come. We'll be back momentarily with Grant Napier speaking to Naked and Drunk on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHDK.